On today's episode of Think Forever, it's a story of hope. We'll see how mightily the Lord can use even the smallest measure of faith, and how Jesus has the final say over life and death. In the scope of eternity, our lives are just a dot on a line that extends with no end. In this podcast, I tell stories about people who believed that and lived it, so that by looking at their lives, we might better understand how to think forever. Episode 6, A Light in the Darkness, Part 1. Golden shafts of afternoon sunlight poured through the window of the study. Tiny specks of dust danced above the desk, glowing and dimming as they wove between the sun's rays. Jairus set down his quill and rubbed at his bleary eyes. He'd lost his place again. Not everyone took to this work. Leading the synagogue meant tireless hours, caring for the community, teaching their children, tending to the building and property, and the administrative tasks. Well, Jairus supposed he could do without all the writing of correspondence. But mostly, he loved his position. He was no orator like the rabbis, and wasn't given to public speaking anyway, but having the word of the Lord at his fingertips, and quiet space to read, was a joy that outshone any weight of responsibility. He cherished the moments of peaceful solitude when he could fill his mind with the promises of Scripture, of a coming king, and his eternal kingdom. This was not one of those days. Sleep. That is what he needed. A good night's sleep. He drew a deep breath and sighed to his feet, stretching his cramped hand and gazing out the open window. The scent of sweet sea air and fresh-caught fish and narcissus flowers drifted in on the breeze and roused his heavy spirit. The world was beautiful, and things would be better soon. Maybe he could take the Market Street home and buy a small bunch of the narcissus for Ada. Her favorite flowers were sure to make her smile. The door to the study creaked open slowly and broke the shy moment of serenity. Jairus turned to find Rabbi Tovaya shuffling through the doorway. His long, graying beard, made even longer by the hunch in his back, was neatly combed and lay upon his too large robes. At nearly 80 years old, Tovaya was by far the most senior member of the synagogue, and wore his age with grace. His body may have slowed of late, but his mind was sharp as a soldier's steel. Jairus himself had learned at his feet as a young boy, and still loved to hear his mentor teach.
"Ah, Jairus, lovely you're here. I was wondering if you might help me with a scroll or two."
"Of course, Rabbi," Jairus said. "What can I get for you?"
"Well, I think a reading from Isaiah would befit this Sabbath, don't you? Let's remind the people of the holiness of God."
Jairus smiled softly. Tovaya's meek manner was starkly juxtaposed to his fervor for the holiness of God. No doubt his eyes would be alight with fire as he taught this week.
"Certainly, Rabbi. Give me just a moment. I'll fetch it for you."
Tovaya idled by the desk while Jairus stepped into the storage closet containing their meager library. Capernaum was a small city and didn't boast a vast trove of books like Jerusalem, so it only took him a moment to locate the scroll the rabbi requested. As he carefully drew the covered scroll from a shelf, he heard Tobiah's voice.
"Have you seen Jesus of Nazareth lately?"
An odd-seeming question from the old rabbi, but not entirely out of place. After Jesus had been cast out of the synagogue in his hometown of Nazareth, he had begun spending much of his time with a group of fishermen in Capernaum. He spoke to crowds everywhere he went, sometimes numbering in the thousands, and there were reports that he had been performing miracles, healing the sick and the blind. There was even a story, though it seemed far-fetched, that he had turned vats of water into wine at a wedding when they had run out. Jairus had been intrigued by Jesus, and had been glad when Tobiah had allowed him to teach in their synagogue. Patience and curiosity were marks of the old rabbi's wisdom. Jesus' words were poignant and powerful, even if he sometimes used metaphors that were difficult to understand. Some of the leaders thought he was too extreme by keeping company with their society's outcasts, but Jesus had told them he came to reach sinners. If what he said was true, he could be more than a simple backcountry teacher. Jairus cradled the precious scroll and said,
"No, I haven't seen him since he was last with us at synagogue, but that was several weeks ago."
The rabbi mused. "I just heard he healed another man in the Gerasenes, cast a demon out of him, and scared a whole herd of pigs off a cliff into the sea. Imagine that."
"Yes, imagine that," Jairus said,
his words trailing off as he pictured the pigs trying to swim. He handed the scroll of Isaiah to the rabbi, who took it gently in his thin hands.
"Apparently, Jesus is on his way back now. He should be in Capernaum by morning at the latest. I dare say he'll have more to say about these things soon. Perhaps we'll have him back to teach at synagogue again."
Jairus raised his brows and nodded absently, his mind still pondering pigs and cliffs and demons.
"How is Ada?"
Tobiah's words snapped Jairus out of his daydream, and his body suddenly remembered its weariness. Ada, his only child, had been ill for a week. It had come on suddenly and left her bedridden with ragged breath. Tobiah must have read the fatigue on his face.
"Still in bed," Jairus said. "The doctor gave her aloe and some cumin seed oil, but she hasn't improved. Malka has hardly left her side."
Jairus rubbed his face again and thought his wife must be even more exhausted than he.
"Go home, Jairus," the rabbi implored him. "Tend to your family. A man can't very well care for the wide world when his wife and daughter need him more. Besides, these letters can wait a day or two. The temple will not fall for lack of a few reports."
Jairus felt the weight of responsibility lighten a bit at the kind words. It would be good to get home. Perhaps they could all get some rest.
"Thank you, Rabbi. I'll just clean up, then head for home."
"Good, good, good man,"
Tobiah said. Then, in a low tone, nearly a whisper,
"In Galilee of the Gentiles, the people who walked in darkness have seen a great light."
"What was that, Rabbi?" Tobiah was gazing at the scroll and let out a small laugh.
"Just pondering the words, my son. How wonderful would it be to see the Messiah in our time?"
He gave Jairus a keen smile, then turned and shuffled back out the door. stone ground on stone in sharp, rhythmic bursts as the walls crumbled around him. His legs were numb, trapped by some unseen mass in the darkness, and his arms lay heavily at his side, as though bound with a cord. Unable to move his head, his eyes searched wildly for light. Faintly, a torch glowed through a growing crack in the wall, and beyond it, beggars by the hundreds pressed toward his collapsing house. "Back!" he tried to say. "Back, or you'll be crushed!" But his mouth was filled with dust, and he choked before the words left his throat. "Gyrus," someone said in a distant voice. The earth shook. "Gyrus!" Rocks crashed onto his bed. "Gyrus!" He woke with a start, panting for air. Cold sweat prickled the back of his neck. He sat up in the bed and felt his arms and legs. Not crushed. The walls were still intact. He slowed his breathing and licked his dry lips. His mouth was parched, but thankfully there was no dust to choke on. The dreams had plagued him the last several nights. They were always the same. The earth quaking, his home falling, the destitute coming to him with outstretched palms, and he, motionless and powerless. That was the first time he had heard his name in their midst, though. It was morning, but just barely. Pale gray light leaked through the curtain, faintly illuminating the bedroom. Malka's side of the bed was empty. He closed his eyes and silently began reciting his morning prayer before being interrupted. "Gyrus!" His younger brother Aram appeared in the doorway, hair mussed and eyes reddened. He looked how Gyrus felt. "Gyrus, we need you." "What is it?" Gyrus asked. He rose quickly and wrapped his cloak around himself against the morning chill. "Ada, just come downstairs." Aram trailed off. Gyrus pushed past his brother and took the stairs two at a time. He heard coughing before he reached Ada's bedroom, sharp and rhythmic, like gravel grinding in a quarry. Inside the cramped room, his wife was lying on the bed beside her little girl. Malka cradled Ada's head in the crook of her arm, kissing her hair and sponging her forehead with a damp cloth. Yesterday's narcissus flowers lay on a stool below the shuttered window. Gyrus knelt beside the bed. His daughter was 12 years old now, but the sickness had diminished her so. She looked much worse than the night before when she had drunk some soup and smiled at her gift. Dark half-circles hung below her closed eyes. Her trembling lips were cracked and raw from coughing, and beads of sweat clung to her forehead and cheeks and chin. He cupped her tiny face in his hand. It was burning hot. He shot a glance to Malka, who slowly slid her tired eyes to meet his. "I'll get the doctor," he said, pushing himself forcefully from the bed. He nearly plowed into his brother, who was standing just outside the room, with his head hung and arms hugging his own body. "I sent for him," Aram said, without looking up, "just before I woke you." "Water, then," Gyrus continued. But Aram laid a hand on his shoulder and nodded to a full bucket on a stool at the bedside. Just as Gyrus was searching for another task, the doctor came through the front door, his stride like a warrior marching to battle. His short, gray and black hair stood up on one side, and he wore no cloak. In his hand, he carried a small satchel of supplies. "Baruch," Gyrus said to him. The doctor did not respond. Gyrus and Aram stepped aside, and Baruch passed the brothers without so much as a glance, then swiftly unpacked his bag onto the foot of the bed.
"Give me space," he said in a commanding voice. "I need to examine her."
Malka slid silently to sit beside the bed, keeping her hand upon her daughter's head.
"Roll her onto her side,"
Baruch instructed. Malka obeyed, and the doctor began his assessment. Jairus sank onto a bench at the kitchen table and rocked his head slowly back and forth in his hands. It had been more than a week of this. Baruch coming every day or two to offer an oil, tincture, or salve, and Ada slowly declining. He had now treated 3 generations of Jairus's family and had delivered Ada himself, but skilled as he was, he did not know the cure for her disease. And Jairus didn't know how much longer his little girl would last. He labored to his feet and peered into his daughter's room. Baruch had his ear to her back as she struggled for each crackling breath. The frown deepened on the doctor's grim face, and he shook his head. He said something quietly to Malka, who buried her face in the blankets and began to weep. Jairus turned his back on the desperate scene, his breath and heartbeat quickening. "No," Jairus muttered. "This couldn't be the end." With clenched fists, he erratically paced between the close walls of the kitchen. He was helpless, hopeless. He searched his mind for anything to do, any medicine Baruch had overlooked, any cure they hadn't tried, but if the doctor was at the end of his ability... Like a gust of stormy wind, he remembered his conversation with Tovaya the day before. There was one person he knew who could heal the sick and the blind, who could cast out demons. And he was due back from the Gerasenes this morning at the latest. Jairus rushed into the bedroom and bent beside the bed once more. He laid a hand on Malka's back and hurriedly said, "Don't give up hope. I'll be back with help."
"Jairus," the doctor interjected, "you need to be here. There's not much time." "I know there's not much time," Jairus shouted back. His eyes burned with hope and fear. Baruch recoiled at the outburst. As Jairus stood, he gently swept the matted hair away from Ada's face. "Hang on, dear one," he said. "Abba will be right back." He made for the front door, but Aram protested. "Where are you going, brother?"
Jairus didn't stop.
"Stay here, Aram. It will be okay."
"She's dying, Jairus. We need to make preparations. We need you."
"No."
Jairus spun to face his little brother.
"She needs Jesus. And I'm going to find him."
Jairus's bare feet thumped against the hard-packed dirt road. The fisherman lived down the hill by the seashore. Surely Jesus would be there with his disciples after a long journey. And so, Jairus ran. He ran and ran past the vacant market and the smith's cold forges, past the Roman houses and taverns, past the grain mills and oil presses, all the way to the low edge of town. The sun was rising higher into the sky and gleamed off the water as he approached the sea. In the distance, he saw a small group of people flocking like sheep along the sandy shore. They were moving toward a group of houses near the docks. Jairus raced toward the home of Jonah. The old fisherman's son often traveled with Jesus, and he would certainly know if they had returned. The crowd beat him there. By the time he arrived, dozens of people were pressing around Jonah's front door, with more streaming in from the surrounding streets. They were standing on crates or on their toes to get a look inside, speaking loudly all at once, creating a cacophony of indistinguishable babble.
"Master,"
one cried above the rest.
"Teacher,"
said another.
"Jesus."
Jairus heard the name, and hope swelled in him, edging out the stabbing fear. He wove through the mass of onlookers, squeezing between their jumping and swaying to make his way to the front.
He inadvertently knocked a young man off a box he was using to spy into one of the high windows and sent the youth sprawling into another small cluster of people just arriving at the scene. With one final lurch, he burst through the mob onto the very threshold of the house and was stopped by a single, large, sinewy arm. Jairus looked up and saw a broad-shouldered man towering nearly a head above him. His thick black beard and shaggy mop of hair intensified his stern expression.
"Wait outside with the rest. The teacher needs to eat before he speaks anymore."
"But this is urgent! My daughter!" The sentry squared his body to Jairus and placed a calloused hand against his chest. Jairus had no doubt this imposing figure could throw him out headlong with little effort, but waiting was not an option. "Please," Jairus said forcefully, "I need to see him now." Just as the large fist started to tighten on Jairus' tunic, he saw the face of Jesus appear behind one of the man's bulky shoulders.
"Thank you, John," Jesus said, smiling. "As always, you guard our rest with vigilance. But our friend here is in distress. Let's see what he has to say."
John loosened his grip, and Jairus fell before Jesus.
"My little daughter is at the point of death. Come and lay your hands on her so that she may be made well and live."
Jesus knelt to the ground beside Jairus. "I know you. From the synagogue." Jairus nodded and lifted his gaze to see Jesus' smile now full of compassion.
"My name is Jairus. Please, Rabbi, I know you can heal the sick. If you will come with me, my daughter will be well."
Jesus took a deep, contemplative breath, then turned to the rest of his followers in the room and said, "Let's go." Immediately, John stepped through the doorway into the crowd and yelled for the people to make way. The mass ebbed at his command and opened a small channel in their midst. Jairus scrambled to his feet and rushed past the disciple to lead the long way back up the hill to his home. The going was slow. The throng followed Jesus, pressing in around him, shouting questions and requests as they went. The disciples' best efforts to keep the people back proved to be in vain, and Jairus felt as though he were dragging a cart overloaded with stones. He walked a few paces in front of Jesus, desperately asking people to make room, and, when they refused to move, parting them with his hands. Every few steps he looked back to make sure he hadn't lost the teacher. They had made it nearly halfway through the city when Jairus glanced back and couldn't see Jesus. It looked like he had been swallowed up by the swarm. Jairus began forcing his way back through the crowd and saw the top of Jesus' head. He was kneeling, facing downhill. He reached out to touch Jesus, but his arm was seized by a powerful grip. He wheeled and grabbed the cloak of the man pulling at him, ready to shove some of the horde back, but saw Aram's face, just inches from his own.
"Brother!" Jairus exclaimed. "I found him! Help me move these people away!"
"Jairus, stop!" Aram retorted. "Jairus, she's dead. Come home. Don't bother the teacher any longer." Jairus stared at Aram blankly, his mouth agape, jaw trembling. Wretched wails tumbled from his belly, and he held on to his brother as the earth seemed to shake beneath him. But this was no dream. His eyes twitched as he frantically sought for Jesus again, still clutching Aram's cloak. Jesus was there again, upright and slowly walking uphill, so close and yet too far away. He was coming, but it was too late. Time itself slowed to a crawl as the crowd closed around him.
"Jesus!"
he screamed.
"Jesus! No!"
And Jairus
crumbled to his knees.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Think Forever. The story was written and performed by me, Joe Mayers, and produced by Aaron Kretzman. If you're enjoying our show, we would love it if you'd subscribe and leave us a review wherever you listen to your podcasts. And make sure to join us next week as we conclude this story with part two of A Light in the Darkness.